Well, good evening, everyone. If you have your Bibles and you're following along, we will begin in the book of Job in just a moment. We'll start with Job chapter 1. I invite you to turn there and follow along. And I'd like to just say welcome to all of you who made it out here this evening. Again, several familiar faces, not just from the congregation here, but some friends from many years ago I haven't seen in a long time, so it's good to see them as well. And just thankful that all of you can be out here this evening. I did want to say one thing that I forgot to say yesterday. And before I came here this week, I drove in on Saturday. And so this week I was getting all the sermons together for preaching here this week. And I just was curious on some of the sermons that I did here 8 years ago. And if you're visiting here, I was the summer preacher here about 8 years ago. And I still have a file, and I keep records of every sermon I've preached wherever I've gone. And so I started pulling some of those sermons out. And let me just say, Scott does not get paid enough. I don't know what you're paying him, but you need to up it, because what he had to work with was not a lot. And then I think he does this every summer. Boy, if my sermons are anything this week, anything like they were 8 years ago, we can just call it tonight and it will be okay. It won't hurt my feelings. But I am just so thankful for the time I spent here and what Scott has done for me. But I do want to apologize for whatever incurred 8 years ago, if that even was preaching. I don't know. But I had a great time and learned a lot here. We have been talking about, this is your first night here. Yesterday we talked a lot about the theme of being focused on Christ and what it means to just kind of step back from the rest of the world when we live in a society that is pulling us in so many different directions, and just try to refocus our minds on our Lord and Savior. So yesterday morning what we talked about was just the reason why. Why focus on Christ? And we looked at because He's our good shepherd. He has loved us and given His life for us, and He cares for us, and He knows each and every one of us. And so we should, as we looked at last night, commit ourselves to Him. Tonight we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to look at something just a little different. And as Scott said, the sermon title, and I have preached this lesson a few other places, and every time people see the title, they think, oh boy, what's Kevin going to get us into? If I were the devil. Some of you and some people I know might not say there is an if that is on that statement. You ask my wife, there are times where she might just say, you're the devil. I don't know. But tonight we're going to look at, well, if I were the devil, what would I do to pull your focus away from Christ? Remember, we've been using these verses in Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 1 and verse 2, that we are to lay aside the sin that so easily ensnares us, and we need to run our race with endurance. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. That is, focusing in on Jesus. And yet there are so many things that are pulling our focus away from Jesus. We know He should be the focus of our lives. We know we should be living a life of obedience to Him. That He should be our all. We sing a song back home, You Are My All in All. And sometimes when we sing that, I question, do we really know what we're singing? Is Jesus truly our all in all? Or is He just get the leftovers? That's really what we talked about yesterday. But there's a verse that we so often, and I am guilty of this, and maybe some of you are too, but there is a verse we read about in 1 Peter chapter 5. We don't need to turn there, because we pretty much all know it by heart, and that's where it says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is roaming around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And here's how that verse is typically taught, at least how I have taught it before. And it goes something along these lines, that when we look at the devil as a lion, I've always taught, you know, when you watch National Geographic or one of those Discovery Channel specials, you see these lions, and they're creeping in the grass, and they get really low, and they stay really quiet, and they sneak up on you when you least expect it. And at the last possible moment, that's when they jump out at you and they get you. And I've taught that before. We need to be careful because we never know when the devil's going to strike. And there's some truth to that, but that's not the point I think Peter's trying to make there. What Peter's saying there, if we, again, just think about that verse logically for a minute, he says, your adversary, the devil, is roaming about or walking about like a roaring lion. In other words, he is telling us the devil is out there. He is real. He does not care if you see him coming. He does not care if you know exactly who he is. He does not care about you. He's out there roaring, just looking for someone to devour. And yet, that's the sad thing about our society. We know the devil. We know the devil is real. In fact, I'm going to give you a statistic in a moment where I believe a lot of people probably don't even know the devil is real. But he wants to devour us. And so often we just let it happen. There was a recent study. This is that statistic I was talking about. And before I give you the statistic, I want you just to get in mind that this study was done with Christians. God-fearing people who believe in Jesus. And this study was done, and this study found that 90% of Christians believe in heaven. Okay, let's stop right there. This is not what this lesson is about, but let me just stop for a minute. If you're a Christian and you're part of that 10%, something is wrong there, okay? What's the point if you don't believe in heaven of being a Christian? But that's not what this lesson is about. What this lesson is about is the next statistic. God-fearing, Jesus-believing Christians, only 30% believe that the devil is real and hell is a real place. That means there are 70% of Christians out there who don't believe the devil is a real thing. Who don't believe that their actions could lead them to a fiery damnation, as we read about in the New Testament. I'm here to tell you tonight that just as real as Jesus is, the devil is real too. If that's not the case, then Jesus is just some crazy lunatic who had a conversation with himself in the wilderness. Because Jesus talked to the devil. Jesus was tempted by the devil. We'll bring up a couple of those things today. But we have to get it in our minds that the devil is real. He wants to rip us away from God. He does not care if we see him coming like we see in 1 Peter chapter 8. He is walking about like a roaring lion. He is holding his chest high because sometimes it seems like he's winning the battle. He wants to devour us. He wants us away from God. Now, tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to open up his playbook. When I played sports in high school, when I played football, we had one day, we would go to practice for a couple hours, and we'd all stay after practice, and that's because we would have what's called a film session. Some of you who have played sports, you understand this. You go into a room, and you actually watch film of your next opponent. And you're watching game tape of your next opponent. You're starting to learn their weaknesses, their strengths. Who are their good players? Who do we need to watch out for? Here's some plays they really like to run. And in these situations, here's some things they like to do so that we're prepared on game day to go out and battle on the field. And we think we know what they're going to throw at us. Well, the devil does something very stupid, in my opinion, in the book of Job, and that is he opens up his playbook wide open for us to see exactly how he would get to us if we let him. And so what we're going to do tonight is something a little different, I understand, but we're going to look at the devil's playbook because I believe if we're going to truly focus ourselves on Jesus Christ, we have to know how the devil pulls us away. We have to know his game plan. We have to know how he works. If we don't know how he works and we're just going through this life like 70% of Christians thinking the devil can't get me because he's not real and hell is not a real place, that's what he wants us to think. He's already won the battle. We have to know how he works. Ephesians chapter 6 tells us that we are not fighting a war, a physical war. We are fighting a war against principalities and the darkness of this world. And we need to seriously be ready to defend ourselves against the wiles of the devil, against the fiery darts of the devil, it will say in Ephesians chapter 6. And so tonight as we walk through the book of Job, I'm going to open up his playbook and I'm going to tell you that if I were the devil, here is how I would get you to get your focus off of Christ and onto I don't care what else. Because here's another thing that we need to understand about the devil, and this is an illustration I like using in this situation. The devil, it's almost like playing a game of tug of war, where you have God on one side. God, we know we should be over here with God, and then there's devil on the other side, and we kind of think of the game as, well, I'm either on the devil's side or I'm on God's side. Well, let me say one thing. The devil does not care if we're on His side. All He cares about is we're somewhere far away from God. The devil would be perfectly fine if we stay right here in the middle. Have you ever thought about that? He doesn't care if you love Him or worship Him. He just wants you away from God. He wants you away from Christ. He wants to take your focus off all the eternal blessings, on what Christ has done for us. And He just wants us somewhere in the middle. And when I read the statistics about what Christians believe, that's exactly where a majority of Christians find themselves. Is heaven real? Well, some believe it's not. The devil's winning. And so we need to look at his playbook. Let's read, starting in the book of Job. And we're going to start reading in verse 6. This is a story that's familiar to many of us. The first several verses there are telling us just about how good of a guy Job is. He's got a lot of great things. He's got a lot of possessions, lots of children. He has houses. He has livestock. He is somebody that prays to God regularly. He is a good, outstanding gentleman with an outstanding family. And yet, here's what happens in verse 6 when we get into the devil's playbook. Starting in Job 1, verse 6, it says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan also came and said to them, and the Lord also came to them, and the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' The Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil.' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him and his household, and around all that is on that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person.' So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, 'The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, when the Sabians raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' While he was still speaking, another also came and said, 'The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' And while he was still speaking, another came and said, 'The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, and took them away. Yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' But while he was still speaking, another also came and said, 'Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house and fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you.' Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshiped." If I were the devil, the first thing we see the devil do, and if I were the devil, if I wanted to pull you away from God, and that's what almost this situation is about. Job is trying to prove to God, "I can get him to curse you to your face," he says. "You don't think I can do it, God? Watch me." If that doesn't go with our theme, I don't know what does. God, I can get Job to take his focus off you, and he will curse you to your face. Just give me a chance to do it. And so God allows it. And if I were the devil, here's the first thing I would do to you if I wanted to get you to curse God to his face. If I were the devil, I would attack all your surroundings. Notice what happened there. And of course, God did tell Satan, you don't touch him. And so Satan went to work, and what he did was he attacked everything surrounding Job. It started with everything around him, but not Job himself. Look at what he attacked. The first messenger comes, he says, the livestock. All the messengers, have, you know, the sheep, the cattle, the camels, they're gone. They were stolen, they were killed, they were taken off. Fire from heaven came down. They're gone, Job. Well, this is a day and age when you had livestock, that meant you were rich. That's how you measured your wealth back then. And so the first thing he takes is everything Job has worked for. His money. Almost like, remember what happened several years ago in 2008? Stock market crashes. All your hard work goes away. Your livestock, your riches, your wealth is gone. But he didn't stop there. Notice the next thing he attacked. He says, Your servants are dying. I'm the only one. But by my count, there's only three or four servants left. Each one says, I alone have escaped to tell you. Everyone else is dead. And in that day and age, again, servants meant you were powerful. So Job, not only did you just lose your riches and your wealth, but you just lost really your power. You don't really have servants anymore, Job. That's Satan. But that didn't stop there. In fact, it goes, he says, you know what? Those houses, great wind came and just swept them all out. Your status, your social status is now gone. You've got nowhere to go. And if that wasn't bad enough, what happened with one of those houses, the older brother's houses, he says, those sons and daughters of yours, they're gone. Children make us happy sometimes, right? But you start looking at what Satan attacked. His first wave of attacks, look at what he hit. He hit his riches, his wealth, his power, his social status, his happiness. He took everything that Job had worked for in life, everything that he held dear, and Satan attacked it first. Without laying a finger on Job himself, Satan was able to completely turn his world upside down. I wonder how many of us have been in a situation like this, where maybe we have not been touched by Satan. And we'll see Satan get there in just a little bit. But how many of us have felt like it's just attack after attack on everything around us, and it seems like everything that we've worked for in life, everything that we hold dear in life, just keeps crumbling to pieces. And sometimes we just say, well, that's bad luck. Have we ever stopped to think that's the devil trying to get to us? That's the devil trying to get us to take our focus off of God and onto all these other things. But have we ever stopped to think that that's the devil trying everything in his willpower to get us to curse God to his face? Because that's exactly how Satan works today. Satan will very rarely use you and I to get to myself. No, he uses everything around us. He will use our friends and our family. He will send other people to tempt us to do things. Satan doesn't need to tempt us himself. He can get other people to do his dirty work. Satan doesn't need to make me sick, although maybe you've been in that situation, like I said, we'll get to in a minute. But I've had friends and family members lose their faith because someone they know has lost their life. Satan still works this way. He'll use media to plant images and thoughts into our heads. If you don't think that's true, turn on the news or even just a football game. He'll use inappropriate songs on the radio, R-rated movies. He'll use sin just riddled in TV shows but hide it with comedy. Satan will use the government. He'll use schools, he'll use textbooks, cell phones, anything he can to attack all of our surroundings. He does it each and every day, and the sad thing is we hardly even realize it. It's not as in your face as Job. Now, Job had one servant after another saying, everything you know is gone, and sometimes that happens to people in life, but other times it's very discreetly. Satan's there just working on all of our surroundings, chipping away, trying to get us to curse God. He attacks from every single angle. He attacks our riches, our wealth, our power, our status. He will take our jobs. He infiltrates our families. He will do whatever he can to get to us. And yet the problem is we have become blind to the fact that Satan is behind all these things. I hope that we're not part of that 30%. Or the 70% that don't believe in the devil. because He is there and He is working against us. His goal is to get us away from God, and that's one thing He does. But listen, He didn't stop there. If I were the devil, the next thing I would do is I would then attack your perseverance. It's one thing to take everything away from you, but can you imagine what Job had to go through there? Just kept coming and coming and coming. And notice what the text says when we were reading, you know, when you get those statements of "I alone have escaped to tell you." It says, while he was still speaking, which means that the previous servant hadn't even finished telling his story. And in the middle of his story, I'm the only one. And he could probably keep telling about what happened to the camels or the servants or whatever. But then another one comes, Job, I got to tell you something. You don't have any idea what just happened. And can you imagine the rapid fire of Job just sitting there one moment and everything's going fine. Then all of a sudden, this goes wrong and this goes wrong and this goes wrong and this goes wrong. Satan was attacking his perseverance. Satan doesn't slow down. Brooke and I just recently heard of a family, and in fact, I don't know the family. Brooke went to school with them. But they just recently had to go up north. They live in Tampa, Florida. And they recently had to go up north to the Northeast because his father passed away. And it just so happened that while they were up in the Northeast for his father's funeral, Hurricane Irma was coming through. And so they said, well, you know what? We're already up here. We're away. We'll just stay up here. We're out of harm's way. It'll be fine. And then when the hurricane goes, we'll drive back home. So they stayed. And of course, it was good because he got to spend more time with his family after his father's funeral. When they drove back home and got to their apartment, because of down power lines, the entire complex went up in flames and they lost everything. And Brooke read that on Facebook and she said, can you imagine coming home from your father's funeral and then realizing that everything you left behind was gone? You talk about how the devil works. He gets to us because he keeps coming. And sometimes we think that we have it bad and we deserve a free pass. And if Satan can just stop for a minute, or many times what we do is we blame it on God. If God can just stop for a minute and stop handing me all these blows, I just need some time to catch my breath, to catch up. And it just seems like one thing after another after another. But what we see is that's how Satan attacked Job. It was one thing after another after another after another. Job had hardly any time to process what was going on before another servant came and started telling him what happened. I want you to think about something for just a moment. And this is just personally for me. There's a lot of different ways we can take this point, but I think what applies to more people more than anything, and again, maybe it just applies to me, but I think you'll find yourselves maybe in these shoes. I've heard a lot of people say, and I've said it, and that's why I'm going this way, this certain sin, and fill in the blank with whatever it is, this certain temptation, this certain sin, it just doesn't affect me. So I've never been tempted by that. Have y'all ever said that before? I've never been tempted by this certain thing. Maybe it's drinking or cussing or cheating or stealing or lying or whatever it is. I've never been tempted by that, and so I don't really worry about that because it's not a temptation for me. Well, good for you. But here's what we need to understand. The devil's going to keep coming. He doesn't care if that's a temptation for you or not. He's going to keep coming and keep coming. And you know what? You could say no 1,000 times. All he needs you to do is say yes once. You ever thought about that? He just needs you to say yes once. And he's got you. Personal story. This is why I take this one to heart so much, is because when I was in high school, that's when people typically experiment and try new things. But I, you know what, drinking, that was not a temptation to me. Never wanted it. Never wanted to do what my friends did, go out on a Friday night and get drunk. Why would I? They look like idiots. It wasn't a temptation to me. And you know how many times I would say no over and over and over and over and over again? And I was so proud of myself. I patted myself on the back so many times. I'd say, Mom and Dad, I don't do what my friends do. You've raised a good boy. But you know what? It took one time for me to say, maybe I'll try it. And that one time became another, and it became another, and it became another, and another. And here's the thing. I'm not alone in what happened. Because what Satan does is he attacks over and over and over and over again before we finally just give in. Galatians 6 verse 9 says, "Do not let us grow weary while doing good. For in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." Sometimes we get weary of Satan's attacks. Don't grow weary of doing good. Keep doing the right thing. Keep pushing forward. Keep fighting against the wiles of the devil. And we will gain that reward that we talked about last night. But that's not all Satan does. Let's continue reading in chapter 2, starting in verse 1. It says, "Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came and also among them and present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause.' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life.' And so Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of ashes." The next thing we see that Satan can do, and if I were Satan, if I still haven't gotten you yet, and that's what we see happen here, you can almost hear God taunting the devil, can't you? "Have you considered my servant Job, the one that you said if you did all these things, he would curse me in my face?" Well, guess what? He hasn't. Satan says, "Well, let me at him. Let me at him." And so what does he do? He goes straight for his health. He goes straight for his health. Now, I want to make this point clear. I'm not saying that every sickness anybody ever gets is the devil. I've preached this lesson before, and someone said, "Are you saying I'm sick because of the devil?" I'm saying, no, that's not what I'm saying. I don't know why. I can't explain why people get diseases. I can't explain why good people die of horrible diseases. My mother-in-law was one of them. I can't explain that. I can't explain why we have to say goodbye to loved ones too soon. I can't explain why young kids get sick. I can't explain some of these things. I just don't have answers. But what we do see here in the book of Job is apparently the devil does have some dominion over those things. And I can't explain how or why or the process of that, but the devil touched Job and boils came all over his body. And he went straight for his health. And how many times have you or someone you've known have been attacked that way? And what we want to do is we want to blame God. And we want to give up on God. But here Satan finally came after Job himself. And maybe you're sitting here this evening and you say, well, I've never been touched by some physical sickness that is faith-altering or faith-changing. But I can almost guarantee you that all of us have had our spiritual health touched by Satan at some point. Can we agree? That all of us have been through something where Satan has targeted our spiritual health. He makes us doubt. He makes us question. He makes us feel horrible and feel vulnerable. And if I were the devil, my goal would be to do anything to you I can to make you give up. Because the devil knows that when we're with God, He gives life. I love what Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 38 and verse 16. It says, "Lord, by these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit, so you will restore me and make me live." I think the devil knows that God gives life. And if he can get us away from there, and if he can make us think that our physical or even our spiritual health isn't worth it, then nobody can save us except God. And sadly, I've known too many people who have let Satan attack them spiritually, who have let their spiritual health die because they have let Satan pull them away. But what's even worse in Job's case is, again, it didn't stop there. Man, poor Job. He has been attacked over and over and over again. But look at what happened next. It was his wife, his encourager, his helpmeet. The one that I know they probably didn't have vows like we do today, but in sickness and in health, should have stood by his side. And yet she's the one that came up and said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" Man, if Brooke ever said that to me, we'd have problems. I know we'd have problems if I ever said that to her. Just curse God and die. It's time to give up. And here's probably the hardest thing to understand about Satan, is that if I were the devil, I would use the people around you that you're closest to, that you love. And I would use them to try to get you away from God. Satan pulled out all the stops on this last one. Satan's greatest weapon against Job was the person that Job trusted the most, his wife. And it goes even farther, because wasn't it three of his good friends that traveled and came and sat with Job? And told him much of the same things? Trying to plant seeds of doubt in his mind. "Job, you must have done something wrong. What did you do?" Sometimes Satan will use somebody that we thought was our best friend, that we thought would be with us through thick and thin. Sometimes it's the person we love and trust the most that will have the harshest impact on our spiritual life when evil is done or when wrongdoings are done. There's certain people in my life that I consider spiritual giants. And I have some people in my life that I don't share names with people, because it's not a ranking system. It's not something where I'm going to ever want to hurt anybody's feelings. But I just have certain people in my life that when I look at them, they're my spiritual giants. That's who I look up to. And I'm sure you have somebody in mind like that as well. People that maybe taught you the gospel. They're a good example to you. Maybe they've been through a difficult time and came at it all right, and they showed the light of Christ during whatever circumstance they were going through. Recently, and this was just recently, one of my spiritual giants made one of the biggest mistakes he will ever make. I'll never forget when it was actually Brooke who told me, because she had heard from a friend about him having an affair. This is someone who had taught me, who had taken me into his home, who would call me his son, because when my parents weren't there, because they were across the country, it was him that would say, "You're my number three." Because that's where I would have fallen in line with his kids. And I'll never forget that. I'll be completely honest, that was the first time where I ever had just a twinge in my mind of, well, if that could happen to him, what's the point? And this became so real to me, because I saw someone that was so close do something in my mind that I hate saying this, but you know, we rank sins in our mind. And I'll never forget just hearing that and saying, how? And it made me question. And then Brooke could tell a couple days later, I was still just so upset by it, and I was still just trying to wrap my mind around that. And She came up to me. She goes, you know, my mom always said something to me. And she goes, and take it for what it's worth. She said, but my mom always said, Kevin, the people who are closest to you in life are going to be the ones that hurt you the most. And it's because what we do is we hold them in such high esteem that when they fail, it hurts us the most. And she said, Kevin, we have to remember that although he was your giant, he's still a child of God. Man, she's so right. We look at this and we say, how dare Job's wife? And yes, I think Satan was using her against Job, trying to plant seeds of doubt or all these things. And everyone might have their own different scenario of times where you felt hurt by somebody else or somebody has tried to get you to doubt or whatever the situation may be. But we have to realize that all of us are children of God. Not one of us are going to be perfect. And so Satan will use those imperfect people to do the injustices in our lives like this. I understand that's a tough thing to swallow because I'm sure many of us in this room have been hurt by other people. But Job understood something that I think sometimes we forget. And that is, my faith in God does not hinge upon anybody else's faith in God. Just because Job's trusted wife, the love of his life, said, curse God and die, does not mean Job had to do it. In fact, I read a verse and I was waiting to come back to until this point. But in verse 20, did you notice what Job did after all these other things happened to him? It says he fell on his face and he worshiped. And here still, after wave and wave of attack, even his wife, the closest person to him, says, go ahead and curse God and die. He said, shall I accept the good and not the bad? Job understood that his faith in God, his focus on God, did not hinge upon anything else, not even those people closest to him. You know, we have this verse, do not be deceived, evil company corrupts good habits. I'm not saying Job's wife was evil at all, but what I want us to think about is if this is true, the opposite is also true, that good company encourages good habits or good morals. We're all going to fail, but we can be surrounding ourselves with people that want to see us succeed. We can be surrounding ourselves with people with the same goal of heaven that we have, so that when these difficult times do come, we are surrounded by people who will lift us up and carry us on. And let's just say, as we close this evening, let's look at just how we can deal with the devil. How can we defeat the devil, knowing exactly how he works? Look, I want to just notice a couple things that God did for Job. The first thing is we need to understand God has confidence in us to stay focused on our goals. I think it's so interesting in this story that when Satan came, it was not Satan saying, can I take this one for a little while? But it was God saying, have you considered my servant Job? If that's not a vote of confidence, I don't know what is, for God to say, take him. No, I'm not saying, and this is a whole other study for a whole other time, I'm not saying that God and the devil are up there playing a chess game thinking which one's going to give up before the other. That's not what I'm suggesting here. But we do see in the story that God did say, have you considered this one? Have you considered Job? God had complete confidence in him. Would it shock you to know that God has confidence in you as well? That verse there in verse 8 just gets me every time. And sometimes I think when I'm going through my difficulties, when I'm going through hard times, is this God telling me, you can do this? Because as we read about in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, when it says, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Paul had to tell the Corinthians, God's not going to give you anything you can't handle. And I've always had it said to me, and I've always been taught this way, when we're going through something difficult in life, it's almost like God's saying, I know you can do this. I'm not going to give you anything you can't handle. Keep going. Keep persevering. Sometimes we just need that reminder. I'm sure there's people here going through a difficult time. I'm sure there are people here who have taken their focus off of God and put it on so many other different things in this world. But be reminded tonight that God has confidence in us. He is not going to allow us to be tempted beyond what we are able to handle. He believes in us. Do we believe in ourselves? We also, and I believe Job did this, and we referenced these verses just a moment ago, but in 1 Peter chapter 5, we need to be alert and be prepared for what the devil has thrown at us. Turn with me to the book of 1 Peter in chapter 5. I want to read just a couple verses on either side of that lion verse, as I like to call it. But starting in verse 6 of that section there, in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 6, it says, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. We looked at that yesterday morning. Be sober, be vigilant, or be alert, be watchful, some of your versions will say. Be prepared, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. Resist him. Be steadfast in your faith. Be watchful. If our adversary, the devil, is out there like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, he's not trying to sneak up on us. We know he's coming. We know exactly what his plans are. And so let's be watchful and be alert. Lastly, don't forget to be strong and be courageous. There are times, and I can't imagine what Job had to go through, but when his wife, I was told, before I was married, Brooke and I were engaged, and I was told if I learn 5 words, I had to count them in my head real quick. If I learned 5 words, I would be okay. Yes, ma'am, whatever you say. If I learned those words, I was going to do good in life. It's worked out pretty well so far. I think we have a happy marriage. I just say, yes, ma'am. Can you imagine the strength and the courage it would have taken to stand up to his wife and say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to still bless God. Can you imagine the strength and courage it would have taken to stand up to his friends when they came? And continue to stand for God? That's a difficult thing. So many of us have been swayed by the different people in our lives. So many of us have allowed ourselves to be hurt, to question things spiritually because of what Satan has done. Be strong. Be courageous. I love what God tells Joshua there at the end of Deuteronomy and the beginning of Joshua, as Joshua is about ready to take over for Moses, who had passed away. Can you imagine filling the shoes of Moses? I can't imagine. Can you imagine the doubt and the fear that Joshua would have had going into this huge conquest, knowing that Moses is now dead and it's his responsibility, and yet God tells him, be strong and of good courage, for I am with you. The devil is real. The devil is out there. But God is with us. I want to leave you with one last thing. You can go ahead and close your Bibles and then we'll sing our invitation song. But this just puts things into perspective with how the devil works and where we are today. In fact, this was, and some of you may have seen this before. Some of you may have seen this online, or even you can, I think, go online and hear the audio of this, and I won't do it justice, but there was something put out by Paul Harvey about out in 1965, titled, If I Were the Devil. And he says, if I were the prince of darkness, I would want to engulf the whole world in darkness. I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I would not be happy until I had seized the ripest apple of the tree. That's you. So I would set out about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first, and I would begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve, do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince the children that man created God instead of the other way around. I'd confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach you to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. Then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellect but neglect to discipline emotions. I'd tell teachers to let those students run wild. And before you knew it, you would have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. With a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing and judges promoting pornography. Soon, I would evict God from the courthouse and the schoolhouse and then from the houses of the Congress. In his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I'd lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. What'll you bet I couldn't get the whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich? I'd convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, and that what you see on television is the way to be. And thus, I could undress you in public and lure you into bed with diseases for which there are no cures. In other words, if I were the devil, I just keep right on doing what he's already doing. That's where we are. Because the devil is doing everything we just talked about. He's attacking our surroundings. He's attacking us personally. He's attacking our health. He's attacking our lifestyle. He's using the people closest to us. But it's time that you and I put a stop to it. It's time that you and I learn his playbook and learn what he does. It's time that you and I turn our focus back to God. Because as we read in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 2, we need to fight the sin that so easily ensnares us. That's the devil. And run our race with endurance, fixing our eyes on Jesus. Maybe you're here tonight, and you have found yourself being pulled away. You have found yourself so focused on everything else, and you think the devil's winning in your life. There's a moment, this isn't the time, to turn that around, to be better, to tell yourself that now is the time I'm going to be strong and courageous. I'm putting my foot down, and I'm focusing my heart back on God. But maybe you're here tonight, and you've never obeyed the gospel. We want to offer the Lord's invitation to you. Again, this is the time to show the devil whose side you stand on. You're going to have all your sins washed away in the waters of baptism so you could stand up and you could say that there's a crown of life waiting for me, and that's our goal. That's what we're going to look at tomorrow night, living for a future. What does that look like? We invite you back tomorrow night. If we can do anything for you tonight, you can come forward as we stand and as we sing.